This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of First, Break All the Rules, What the World's Greatest Managers Do Differently, by Marcus Buckingham and Kurt Kaufman, performed by Mel Foster. This book includes two unique one-use-only access codes that allow you to take the Clifton StrengthsFinder 2.0 assessment and the Q12 Employee Engagement Survey. If you purchase the MP3 CD or audio CD, your codes will be located inside the packaging. If you purchase the download version, you will receive the code for the Q12 Employee Engagement Survey only. Your download provider will email the code to you. These access codes are valid for one use only. If you are a library patron, the codes for the assessment and survey discussed in this book are not available in this edition. If you want to take the assessment and survey, you can purchase the book, which includes the access codes to take the assessment and survey, at any book retailer.
What's new in this edition? First, Break All the Rules was first written by former Gallup associates Kurt Kaufman and Marcus Buckingham. Gallup thanks them both for eloquently communicating decades of Don Clifton's and hundreds of colleagues' accumulated material for the initial 1999 release of the book. While the original material remains essentially unchanged with this re-release of First Break All the Rules, readers will have access to the products Gallup created to help managers and leaders turn employees' talents into great performance. Along with updated Gallup meta-analytic research on the linkage of employee engagement and organizational outcomes, readers get an access code to complete the Clifton StrengthsFinder 2.0 assessment. This assessment will identify your top five themes of talent so you can spend more time doing what you do best each day. People who focus on their strengths every day are six times as likely to be engaged in their jobs, more productive, and more likely to say they have an excellent quality of life. An access code to set up and administer one Q12 employee engagement survey. The Q12 survey will give you insight into your team's engagement by measuring what matters most to your employees. Gallup's Q12 survey results tie directly to outcomes such as productivity, profitability, employee retention, and turnover. First Break All the Rules established the science of employee engagement. Since the book's initial publication, Gallup has helped organizations around the world measure the engagement of more than 30 million employees. By re-releasing this groundbreaking bestseller, Gallup looks forward to managers and organizations measuring, managing, and increasing engagement for millions of employees. Foreword. Just 13% of the world's workers, and roughly one-third in the U.S., are engaged at work. Over the past 1.5 decades, the percentage of engaged workers has barely budged. But it doesn't have to be this way. In fact, many companies have bucked this pattern to achieve double to triple the percentage of engaged workers in the general populace. The performance of elite organizations, those that engage 9 employees for every actively disengaged employee, far surpasses that of their peers. This didn't happen by accident. These companies did something different and intentional. They developed a critical mass of great managers who look out for the organization's best interests while simultaneously improving the lives of the people they manage. Gallup has now measured, studied, and applied the 12 elements of great managing, which distinguish engaged and productive workplaces from their less successful counterparts in hundreds of organizations employing more than 30 million people. First Break All the Rules is a summary of Gallup studies accumulated in the mid to late 1990s. These studies were initiated by the lifetime work of the late Dr. Donald O. Clifton, whom the American Psychological Association commended as the father of strengths-based psychology. The findings of these studies have withstood the test of time, massive changes in technology, and wild fluctuations in the economy. This book describes what great managers do differently than average or mediocre managers. Since the initial publication of First Break All the Rules in 1999, Gallup has conducted many additional iterations of research around the world that reveal a multitude of connections between individual strengths, engagement, and organizational outcomes, including updated research in Appendix E of this book, which can be found in the bonus material. Research presented in the State of the American Workplace, State of the Global Workplace, and State of the American Manager reports, and many other studies and articles posted on Gallup.com, where Gallup publishes all of its latest discoveries. Engaged workers view the world differently than disengaged workers do because they have managers who develop their strengths rather than fixate on their weaknesses. The insights from the study of great managers provide a lens into how your company can keep your best performers, engage your customers, improve performance and profitability, and ultimately improve the economy through authentic job growth. Jim Harder, Ph.D., Gallup's Chief Scientist, Workplace Management and Well-Being, February 2016. Introduction, Breaking All the Rules. The greatest managers in the world do not have much in common. They are different sexes, races, and ages. They employ vastly different styles and focus on different goals. But despite their differences, these great managers do share one thing. Before they do anything else, they first break all the rules of conventional wisdom. They do not believe that a person can achieve anything he sets his mind to. They do not try to help a person overcome his weaknesses. They consistently disregard the golden rule. And yes, they even play favorites. Great managers are revolutionaries, although few use that word to describe themselves. This book will take you inside the minds of these managers to explain why they have toppled conventional wisdom and reveal the new truths they have forged in its place. We are not encouraging you to replace your natural managerial style with a standardized version of theirs. As you will see, great managers do not share a standardized style. Rather, our purpose is to help you capitalize on your own style by showing you how to incorporate the revolutionary insights shared by great managers everywhere. This book is the product of two mammoth research studies Gallup conducted over the last 25 years. The first concentrated on employees, asking, what do the most talented employees need from their workplace? Gallup surveyed more than a million employees from a broad range of companies, industries, and countries. We asked them questions on all aspects of their working life, then dug deep into their answers to discover the most important needs that the most productive employees demanded. Our research yielded many discoveries, but the most powerful was this. Talented employees need great managers. The talented employee may join a company because of its charismatic leaders, its generous benefits, and its world-class training programs. But how long that employee stays and how productive he is while he is there is determined by his relationship with his immediate supervisor. This simple discovery led us to the second research effort. How do the world's greatest managers find, focus, and keep talented employees? To answer this question, we went to the source: large companies and small companies, privately held companies, publicly traded companies, and public sector organizations, and interviewed a cross-section of their managers, from the excellent to the average. How did we know who was excellent and who was average? We asked each company to provide us with performance measures. We used measures like sales, profit, customer satisfaction scores, employee turnover figures, employee opinion data, and 360-degree surveys to distill the best managers from the rest. During the last 25 years, Gallup has conducted, tape-recorded, and transcribed 1.5-hour interviews with more than 80,000 managers. Some of these managers were in leadership positions. Some were mid-level managers. Some were frontline supervisors. But all of them had one or more employees reporting to them. We focused our analysis on managers who excelled at turning the talent of their employees into performance. Despite their obvious differences in style, we wanted to discover what, if anything, these great managers had in common. Their ideas are plain and direct, but they are not necessarily simple to implement. Conventional wisdom is conventional for a reason. It is easier. It is easier to believe that each employee possesses unlimited potential. It is easier to imagine that the best way to help an employee is by fixing his weaknesses. It is easier to do unto others as you would be done unto. It is easier to treat everyone the same and so avoid charges of favoritism. Conventional wisdom is comfortingly, seductively easy. The revolutionary wisdom of great managers isn't. Their path is much more exacting. It demands discipline, focus, trust, and perhaps most important, a willingness to individualize. In this book, great managers present no sweeping new theories, no prefabricated formulae. All they can offer you are insights into the nature of talent and into their secrets for turning talent into lasting performance. The real challenge lies in how you incorporate these insights into your style, one employee at a time, every day. This book gives voice to 1 million employees and 80,000 managers. While these interviews ground the book in the real world, their sheer number can be overwhelming. It is hard to imagine what one talented employee or one great manager sounds like. The following excerpt from a single interview captures something of both the tone and the content of our in-depth interviews. As with all the managers we quote, we have changed this manager's name to preserve his anonymity. We will call him Michael. Michael runs a fine dining restaurant owned by a large hospitality company in the Pacific Northwest. Since Gallup first met Michael 15 years ago, his restaurant has been in the company's top 10% on sales, profit, growth, retention, and customer satisfaction. From the perspective of his company, his customers, and his employees, Michael is a great manager. Throughout this book, you will hear Michael's comments echoed by other managers and employees. But rather than pointing out these echoes, we ask you to make the connections for yourself as you move through the chapters. For the moment, we will simply let Michael speak for himself. Gallup, can you tell us about your best team ever? Michael, you mean my whole team? I have at least 30 people working here. Gallup, just tell us about the core of the team. Michael, I suppose my best team ever was my waitstaff team a few years ago. There were 4 of them. Brad was about 35, a professional waiter. He took great pride in being the best waiter in town. He was brilliant at anticipating. Customers never had to ask for anything. The moment the thought entered their mind that they needed more water or a dessert menu, Brad was there at their shoulder handing it to them. Then there was Gary. He was an innocent, not naive, just an innocent. He instinctively thought the world was a friendly place, so he was always smiling and cheerful. I don't mean that he wasn't professional, because he was. He always came in looking neat, wearing a freshly pressed shirt. But it was his attitude that so impressed me. Everyone liked to be around Gary. Susan was our greeter. She was lively, energetic, and presented herself very well. When she first joined us, I guessed that she might lack a little common sense, but I was wrong. She handled the customers perfectly. On busy nights, she would tell them pleasantly but firmly that last-minute reservations couldn't be accepted. During lunch, some customers just want to get their order, pay, and leave. Susan would figure this out and let their server know that with this particular customer, speed was of the essence. She paid attention and she made good decisions. Emma was the unspoken team builder in the crew. Quieter, more responsible, and more aware of everyone else, she would get the team together before a busy Saturday night and just talk everyone through the need to put on a good show, to be alert, and to help each other get out of the weeds. These four were the backbone of my best team ever. I didn't really need to interfere. They ran the show themselves. They would train new hires, set the right example, and even eject people who didn't fit. For a good 3 years, they were the restaurant. Gallup. Where are they now? Michael. Susan, Emma, and Gary all graduated and moved back east. Brad is still with me. Gallup. Do you have a secret to building great teams? Michael. No, I don't think there is a secret. I think the best a manager can do is to make each person comfortable with who they are. Look, we all have insecurities. Wouldn't it be great if, at work, we didn't have to confront our insecurities all the time? I didn't try to fix Brad, Susan, Gary, and Emma. I didn't try to make them clones of each other. I tried to create an environment where they were encouraged to be more of who they already were. As long as they didn't stomp on each other, and as long as they satisfied the customers, I didn't care that they were all so different. Gallup, how did you get to know these people so well? Michael, I spent a lot of time with them. I listened. I took them out for dinner, had a couple of drinks with them, and had them over to my place for holidays. But mostly, I was just interested in who they were. Gallup, what do you think of the statement, familiarity breeds contempt? Michael, it's wrong. How can you manage people if you don't know them, their style, their motivation, their personal situation? I don't think you can. Gallup, do you think a manager should treat everyone the same? Michael, of course not. Gallup, why? Michael, because everyone is different. I was telling you about Gary before, how great an employee he was, but I fired him twice. A couple of times his joking around went too far, and he really jerked my chain. I really liked him, but I had to fire him. Our relationship would have been ruined if I hadn't put my foot down and said, "Don't come in on Monday." After each time, he learned a little bit more about himself and his values, so I hired him back both times. I think he's a better person because of what I did. My firm hand worked with Gary. It wouldn't have worked at all with Brad. If I even raised my voice with Brad, I would get the exact opposite reaction from the one I wanted. He would be crushed. He'd shut down. So when I disagreed with him, I had to talk quietly and reason everything through with him quite carefully. Gallup. Isn't it unfair to treat people differently? Michael. I don't think so. I think people want to feel understood. Treating them differently is part of helping them feel unique. If I know that one of my people is the primary breadwinner, then as long as he performs, I will be more likely to give him better hours than someone who's a student. The student might be a little annoyed, but when I explain the situation to him, he usually calms down. Besides, he knows that I will be paying attention to his personal situation when he needs a special favor. That's always a good message to send. Gallup. Other than Gary, have you ever fired anyone? Michael. Unfortunately, I have. Like most managers, sometimes I don't pick the right people and things start to fall apart. Gallup. What is your approach to firing an employee? Michael. Do it fast. The faster, the better. If someone is consistently underperforming, you might think you're doing them a favor by waiting. You aren't. You're actually making matters worse. Gallup. You've been managing now for 15 years. If you were going to give any advice to a new manager, what would it be? Michael.
I am not an expert at this, you know. I'm still learning.
Gallup. That's fine. Just tell us a couple of the ideas that have helped you over the years. Michael.
Well, I suppose the first would be pick the right people. If you do, it makes everything else so much easier. And once you've picked them, trust them. Everyone here knows that the till is open. If they want to borrow $2 for cigarettes or $200 for rent, they can. Just put an IOU in the till and pay it back. If you expect the best of people, they'll give you the best. I've rarely been let down. And when someone has let me down, I don't think it is right to punish those who haven't by creating some new rule or policy. Another thing would be, don't over-promote people. Pay them well for what they do and make it rewarding in every way for them to keep doing what they're doing. Brad is a great waiter, but he would make a terrible manager. He loves to perform for an audience he respects. He respects the customers. He is less respectful of some of the new employees. As a manager, these employees would be his audience. And especially important, never pass the buck. Never say, I think this is a crazy idea, but corporate insists. Passing the buck may make your little world easy, but the organization as a whole will be weakened. So in the long run, you are actually making your life worse. Even worse are those who find themselves always promising things that don't come to pass. Since you never know what corporate might spring on you next, I recommend living by this simple rule. Make very few promises to your people and keep them all. That's it. That's my list. Gallup, is there anything else that you would like to tell us about your experiences as a manager?
Michael,
maybe just this. A manager has got to remember that he's on stage every day. His people are watching him. Everything he does, everything he says, and the way he says it, sends off clues to his employees. These clues affect performance. So never forget you are on that stage. So that's Michael, or at least that's an excerpt from Michael. During our research, we heard from thousands of managers like Michael, and from hundreds of thousands of employees who worked for managers like Michael. Some of Michael's opinions are commonly held. Never pass the buck, make few promises and keep them all. But the majority of his testament is revolutionary. His desire to help all employees become more of who they already are. His willingness to treat each person differently. His desire to become close friends with his employees. His acceptance that he cannot change people, that all he can do is facilitate, and his trusting nature. Michael, like all great managers, breaks the rules of conventional wisdom. Like you, we know that change is a fact of life. We know that the business climate is in permanent flux, and that different approaches to managing people wax and wane. However, in listening to managers like Michael and the employees they manage, we were searching for that which does not change. What will talented employees always need? What will great managers always do to turn talent into performance? What are the enduring secrets to finding, focusing, and keeping talented employees? What are the constants? These were our questions. On the following pages, we present our discoveries. Chapter 1. The Measuring Stick. A Disaster Off the Scilly Isles. The Measuring Stick. Putting the 12 to the Test. A Case in Point. Mountain Climbing. A Disaster Off the Scilly Isles. What do we know to be important but are unable to measure? In the dense fog of a dark night in October 1707, Great Britain lost nearly an entire fleet of ships. There was no pitched battle at sea.
The admiral, Cloudesley Shovel, simply miscalculated his position in the Atlantic, and his flagship smashed into the rocks of the Scilly Isles, a tail of islands off the southwest coast of England. The rest of the fleet, following blindly behind, went aground and piled onto the rocks one after another. 4 warships and 2,000 lives were lost. For such a proud nation of seafarers, this tragic loss was distinctly embarrassing. But to be fair to the memory of Cloudesley Shovel, it was not altogether surprising. The concept of latitude and longitude had been around since the 1st century BC. But by 1700, we still had not managed to devise an accurate way to measure longitude. Nobody ever knew for sure how far east or west they had traveled. Professional seamen, like Cloudesley Shovel, had to estimate their progress either by guessing their average speed or by dropping a log over the side of the boat and timing how long it took to float from bow to stern. Forced to rely on such crude measurements, the admiral can be forgiven his massive misjudgment. What caused the disaster was not the admiral's ignorance, but his inability to measure something that he already knew to be critically important, in this case, longitude. A similar drama is playing out in today's business world. Many companies know that their ability to find and keep talented employees is vital to their sustained success, but they have no way of knowing whether or not they are effective at doing this. In their book, The Service Profit Chain, James Heskett, W. Earl Sasser, and Leonard Schlesinger make the case that no matter what your business, the only way to generate enduring profits is to begin by building the kind of work environment that attracts, focuses, and keeps talented employees. It is a convincing case, but the manager on the street probably didn't need convincing. Over the last 20 years, most managers have come to realize that their competitiveness depends on being able to find and keep top talent in every role. This is why, in tight labor markets, companies seem prepared to go to almost any lengths to prevent employees' eyes from wandering. If you work for GE, you may be one of the 23,000 employees who are now granted stock options in the company. Employees of Allied Signal and Starbucks can make use of the company concierge service when they forget that their mothers need flowers and their dachshunds need walking. And at Eddie Bauer, in-chair massages are available for all those aching backs hunched over computer terminals. But do any of these caring carrots really work? Do they really attract and keep only the most productive employees? Or are they simply a catch-all, netting both productive employees and road warriors, R-O-A-D warriors, the Army's pithy phrase for those sleepy folk who are happy to retire on active duty? The truth is, no one really knows. Why? Because even though every great manager and every great company realize how important it is, they still haven't devised an accurate way to measure a manager's or a company's ability to find, focus, and keep talented people. The few measurements that are available, such as employee retention figures, number of days to fill openings, or lengthy employee opinion surveys, lack precision. They are the modern-day equivalent of dropping a log over the side of the boat. Companies and managers know they need help. What they are asking for is a simple and accurate measuring stick that can tell them how well one company or one manager is doing compared with others in terms of finding and keeping talented people. Without this measuring stick, many companies and many managers know they may find themselves high and dry, sure of where they want to go, but lacking the right people to get there. And now, there is a powerful new faction on the scene demanding this simple measuring stick. Institutional investors. Institutional investors, like the Council of Institutional Investors, CII, which manages over $1 trillion worth of stocks, and the California Public Employees Retirement System, CalPERS, which oversees a healthy $260 billion, defined the agenda for the business world. Where they lead, everyone else follows. Institutional investors have always been the ultimate numbers guys, representing the cold voice of massed shareholders, demanding efficiency and profitability. Traditionally, they focused on hard results, like return on assets and economic value added. Most of them didn't concern themselves with soft issues like culture. In their minds, a company's culture held the same status as public opinion polls did in Soviet Russia. Superficially interesting, but fundamentally irrelevant. At least, that's the way it used to be. In a recent about-face, they have started to pay much closer attention to how companies treat their people. In fact, the CII and CalPERS both met in Washington to discuss good workplace practices and how they can encourage the companies they invest in to value employee loyalty as an aid to productivity. Why this newfound interest? They have started to realize that whether software designer or delivery truck driver, accountant or hotel housekeeper, the most valuable aspects of jobs are now, as Thomas Stewart describes in Intellectual Capital, the most essentially human tasks, sensing, judging, creating, and building relationships. This means that a great deal of a company's value now lies between the ears of its employees. And this means that when someone leaves a company, he takes his value with him, more often than not, straight to the competition. Today, more than ever before, if a company is bleeding people, it is bleeding value. Investors are frequently stunned by this discovery. They know that their current measuring sticks do a very poor job of capturing all sources of a company's value. For example, according to Baruch Lev, professor of finance and accounting at New York University's Stern School of Business, the assets and liabilities listed on the company's balance sheet now account for only 60% of its real market value. And this inaccuracy is increasing. In the 1970s and 1980s, 25% of the changes in a company's market value could be accounted for by fluctuations in its profits. Today, according to Professor Lev, that number has shrunk to 10%. The sources of a company's true value have broadened beyond rough measures of profit or fixed assets, and bean counters everywhere are scurrying to catch up. Steve Wallman, former commissioner of the Securities and Exchange Commission, describes what they are looking for. If we start to get further afield so that the financial statements are measuring less and less of what is truly valuable in a company, then we start to lower the relevance of that scorecard. What we need are ways to measure the intangibles, R&D, customer satisfaction, employee satisfaction. Companies, managers, institutional investors, even the commissioner of the SEC. Everywhere you look, people are demanding a simple and accurate measuring stick for comparing the strength of one workplace to another. Gallup set out to build one. The measuring stick. How can you measure human capital? What does a strong, vibrant workplace look like? When you walk into the building at Lankford Cisco, a few miles up the road from Ocean City, Maryland, it doesn't initially strike you as a special place. In fact, it seems slightly odd. There's the unfamiliar smell, a combination of raw food and machine oil. There's the decor, row upon row of shelving piled high to the triple ceilings, interspersed with the occasional loading dock or conveyor belt. Glimpses of figures bundled up in Arctic wear, lugging mysterious crates in and out of deep freezers, only add to your disquiet. But you press on, and gradually you begin to feel more at ease. The employees you run into are focused and cheerful. On the way to the reception area, You pass a huge mural that seems to depict the history of the place. There's Stanley E. Lankford, Jr. hiring the first employee. There's the original office building before we added the warehouse. In the reception area, you face a wall festooned with pictures of individual smiling faces. There are dozens of them, each with an inscription that lists their length of service with the company and another number. "They are our delivery associates," explains Fred Lankford, the president. "We put their pictures up so that we can all feel close to them, even though they're out with our customers every day. The number you see under each picture represents the amount of miles that each one drove last year. We like to publicize each person's performance." Stanley Lankford and his three sons, Tom, Fred, and Jim, founded the Lankford Operation, a family-owned food preparation and distribution company, in 1964. In 1981, they merged with Sysco, the $15 billion food distribution giant. An important proviso was that Tom, Fred, and Jim would be allowed to stay on as general managers. Sysco agreed, and today, all parties couldn't be happier with the decision. The Lankford Sysco facility is in the top 25% of all Sysco facilities in growth, sales per employee, profit per employee, and market penetration. They have single-digit turnover, absenteeism is at an all-company low, and shrinkage is virtually non-existent. Most important, the Lankford Sysco facility consistently tops the customer satisfaction charts. "How do you do it?" you ask Fred. He says there's not much to it. He's pleased with his pay-for-performance schemes. Everything is measured, every measurement is posted, and every measurement has some kind of compensation attached. But he doesn't offer that up as his secret. He says it is just daily work. Talk about the customer, highlight the right heroes, treat people with respect, listen. His voice trails off because he sees he's not giving you the secret recipe you seem to be looking for. Whatever he's doing, it clearly works for his employees. Forklift operators tell you about their personal best in terms of most packages picked and fewest breakages. Drivers regale you with their stories of rushing out an emergency delivery of tomato sauce to a restaurant caught short. Everywhere you turn, employees are talking about how their little part of the world is critical to giving the customer the quality that is now expected from Lankford Sysco. Here are 840 employees, all of whom seem to thrill to the challenge of their work. Whatever measurements you care to use, the Lankford Sysco facility in Pocomoke, Maryland is a great place to work. You will have your own examples of a work environment that seems to be firing on all cylinders. It will be a place where performance levels are consistently high, where turnover levels are low, and where a growing number of loyal customers join the fold every day. With your real-life example in mind, the question you have to ask yourself is, what lies at the heart of this great workplace? Which elements will attract only talented employees and keep them? And which elements are appealing to every employee, the best, the rest, and the road warriors? Do talented employees really care how empowered they are as long as they are paid on performance, such as at Lankford Sysco? Perhaps the opposite is true. Once their most basic financial needs have been met, perhaps talented employees care less about pay and benefits than they do about being trusted by their manager. Are companies wasting their money by investing in spiffier workspaces and brighter cafeterias? Or do talented employees value a clean and safe physical environment above all else? To build our measuring stick, we had to answer these questions. Over the last 25 years, Gallup has interviewed more than 1 million employees. We asked each of them hundreds of different questions on every conceivable aspect of the workplace. As you can imagine, 100 million questions is a towering haystack of data. We had to sift through it, straw by straw, and find the needle. We had to pick out those few questions that were truly measuring the core of a strong workplace. This wasn't easy. If you have a statistical mind, you can probably hazard a pretty good guess as to how we approached it. A combination of focus groups, factor analysis, regression analysis, concurrent validity studies, and follow-up interviews. Our research approach is described in detail in Appendix D and Appendix E. However, if you think statistics are the mental equivalent of drawing your fingernails across a chalkboard, the following image may help you envision what we were trying to do. In 1666, Isaac Newton closed the blinds of his house in Cambridge and sat in a darkened room. Outside, the sun shone brightly. Inside, Newton cut a small hole in one of the blinds and placed a glass prism at the entrance. As the sun streamed through the hole, it hit the prism, and a beautiful rainbow fanned out on the wall in front of him. Watching the perfect spectrum of colors playing on his wall, Newton realized that the prism had pried apart the white light, refracting the colors to different degrees. He discovered that white light was, in fact, a mixture of all the other colors in the visible spectrum, from dark red to deepest purple, and that the only way to create white light was to draw all of these different colors together into a single beam. We wanted our statistical analyses to perform the same trick as Newton's prism. We wanted them to pry apart strong workplaces to reveal the core. We could then say to managers and companies, if you can bring all of these core elements together in a single place, then you will have created the kind of workplace that can attract, focus, and keep the most talented employees. So we took our mountain of data and searched for patterns. Which questions were simply different ways of measuring the same factor? Which were the best questions to measure each factor? We weren't particularly interested in questions that yielded a unanimous, "Yes, I strongly agree." Nor were we swayed by questions to which everyone said, "No, I strongly disagree." Rather, we were searching for those special questions to which the most engaged employees, those who were loyal and productive, answered positively, and everyone else, the average performers and the road warriors, answered neutrally or negatively. Questions that we thought were a shoe-in, like those dealing with pay and benefits, fell under the analytical knife. At the same time, innocuous little questions, such as, do I know what is expected of me at work, forced their way to the forefront. We cut and we culled. We rejigged and reworked, digging deeper and deeper to find the core of a great workplace. When the dust finally settled, we made a discovery. Measuring the strength of a workplace can be simplified to 12 question items, now known as the Q12 items. These 12 items don't capture everything you may want to know about your workplace, but they do capture the most information and the most important information. They measure the core elements needed to attract, focus, and keep the most talented employees. Here they are. Q1, I know what is expected of me at work. Q2, I have the materials and equipment I need to do my work right. Q3, at work, I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day. Q4, in the last 7 days, I have received recognition or praise for doing good work. Q5, my supervisor or someone at work seems to care about me as a person. Q6. There is someone at work who encourages my development. Q7. At work, my opinions seem to count. Q8. The mission or purpose of my company makes me feel my job is important. Q9. My associates or fellow employees are committed to doing quality work. Q10. I have a best friend at work. Q11. In the last 6 months, someone at work has talked to me about my progress. Q12. This last year, I have had opportunities at work to learn and grow. These 12 items are the simplest and most accurate way to measure the strength of a workplace. When we started this research, we didn't know we were going to land on these 12 items, but after running 100 million questions through our PRISM, these exact items emerged as the most powerful. If you can create the kind of environment where employees answer positively to all 12 items, then you have built a great place to work. While at first glance, the Q12 items seem rather straightforward, the more you look at them, the more intriguing they become. First, you probably noticed that many of the items contain an extreme. I have a best friend at work, or at work I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day. When the items are phrased like this, it is much more difficult to strongly agree, to give a 5 on a scale of 1 to 5. But this is exactly what we wanted. We wanted to find items that would discriminate between the most productive departments and the rest. We discovered that if we removed the extreme language, the item lost much of its power to discriminate. Everyone would strongly agree, the best, the rest, and everyone in between. An item to which everyone always answers strongly agree is a weak item. Much of the power of this measuring stick, then, lies in the wording of the items. The issues themselves aren't a big surprise. Most people knew, for example, that strong relationships and frequent praise were vital ingredients of a healthy workplace. However, they didn't know how to measure whether or not these ingredients were present, and if so, to what extent. Gallup has discovered the best items to do just that. Second, you may be wondering why there are no items dealing with pay, benefits, senior management, or organizational structure. There were, initially, but they disappeared during the analysis. This doesn't mean they are unimportant. It simply means they are equally important to every employee, good, bad, and mediocre. Yes, if you are paying 20% below the market average, you may have difficulty attracting people. But bringing your pay and benefits package up to market levels, while a sensible first step, will not take you very far. These kinds of issues are like tickets to the ballpark. They can get you into the game, but they can't help you win. Putting the 12 to the test. Does the measuring stick link to business outcomes? Gallup had set out to devise a way to measure strong workplaces. Workplaces that would attract and retain the most productive employees and scare away the road warriors. If the Q12 items were truly the best items, then employees who responded to them positively would presumably work in higher performing departments. That was our goal when we designed the measuring stick. Would it prove to be true in practice? Throughout the spring and summer of 1998, Gallup launched a massive investigation to find out. We asked 24 different companies, representing a cross-section of 12 distinct industries, to provide us with scores measuring 4 different kinds of business outcomes: productivity, profitability, employee retention, and customer satisfaction. Some companies had difficulty gathering these data, but in the end, we managed to include more than 2,500 business units in our study. The definition of a business unit varied by industry. For banking, it was the branch. For hospitality, it was the restaurant or hotel. For manufacturing, it was the factory, and so on. We then interviewed 105,000 employees who worked in these branches, restaurants, hotels, factories, and departments, asking them to respond to each of the Q12 items on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being strongly disagree and 5 being strongly agree. Armed with all these data, we were set to go. We knew the productivity, the profitability, the retention levels, and the customer ratings of these different business units. And we knew how the employees of the business units had responded to the 12 items. We could now see, finally, whether or not engaged employees did indeed drive positive business outcomes across 2,500 business units and 24 companies. We were optimistic that the links would surface, but truth be told, it was entirely possible that we wouldn't find them. The links between employee opinion and business unit performance seem inevitable. After all, most of us have probably heard ourselves rattle off such cliches as, happy employees are more productive, or, if you treat your people right, they will treat your customers right. Yet, in their attempts to prove these statements, researchers have frequently come up empty-handed. In fact, in most studies, if you test 100 employee opinion question items, you will be lucky to find 5 or 6 that show a strong relationship to any business outcome. Disappointingly, if you repeat the study, you often find that a different set of 5 or 6 question items pop up the second time around. We also knew that no one had ever undertaken this kind of study before, across many different companies. Since each of these 4 business outcomes, productivity, profit, retention, and customer service, is vitally important to every company, and since the easiest lever for a manager to pull is the employee lever, you would have thought the air would be thick with research examining the links between employee opinion and these 4 business outcomes. It isn't. You can track down research examining these links within a particular company with decidedly mixed results, but never across companies and industries. Surprisingly, the Gallup research was the first cross-industry study to investigate the links between employee opinion and business unit performance. Why does this research vacuum exist? More than likely, it's because each company has different ways of measuring the same thing. Blockbuster Video might measure productivity by sales per square foot. Langford Cisco might use packages shipped and number of breakages. The Walt Disney Company might include only full-time employees in its retention figures. Marriott might include full-time and part-time employees. It is frustratingly difficult to pick up on linkages between employee opinion and business performance when every company insists on measuring performance differently. Fortunately, we had discovered a solution, a meta-analysis, a detailed explanation that can put even the most ardent number cruncher to sleep. So let's just say that it is a statistical technique that cuts through the different performance measures different companies use and allows you to zero in on the real links between employee opinion and business unit performance. So, having entered the performance data from over 2,500 business units and the opinion data from 105,000 employees, we programmed the meta-analysis formulas, pressed run, and held our breath. This is what we found. First, we saw that employees who responded more positively to the 12 items also worked in business units with higher levels of productivity, profit, retention, and customer satisfaction. This demonstrated for the first time the link between employee opinion and business unit performance across many different companies. Second, the meta-analysis revealed that employees rated the items differently depending on which business unit they worked for rather than which company. This meant that for the most part, these 12 opinions were being formed by the employee's immediate manager rather than by the policies or procedures of the overall company. We had discovered that the manager, not pay, benefits, perks, or a charismatic corporate leader, was the critical player in building a strong workplace. The manager was the key. We will discuss this finding in more detail later in the chapter. For now, let's concentrate on our first discovery, the link between employee opinion and business unit performance. The links between employee opinion and business unit performance. If you are so inclined, you can find a detailed description of all of our discoveries and the methodology behind them in Appendix D and Appendix E. This is the top line. Every one of the Q12 items was linked to at least one of the four business outcomes: productivity, profitability, retention, and customer satisfaction. Most of the items revealed links to two or more business outcomes. The 12 items were indeed capturing those few vital employee opinions that relate to top performance, whether in a bank, a restaurant, a hotel, a factory, or any other kind of business unit. The measuring stick had withstood its most rigorous test. As you might have expected, business units with more employees who said that they know what is expected of them and that they have the materials and equipment to do their work right were substantially more productive than those with fewer employees endorsing these basic necessities. Nearly all of the 12 items linked to productivity, including those measuring recognition, feeling cared about, individual development, and opinions counting. People have always believed there is a direct link between an employee's opinion and his work group's productivity. Nonetheless, it was good to see the numbers jibe with the theory. Nearly all of the 12 items also showed a link to the profitability measure. That means employees who responded to the items more positively than other employees also worked in more profitable banks, restaurants, hotels, factories, or departments. To some people, this might seem a little surprising. After all, many believe that profit is a function of factors that lie far beyond the control of individual employees. Factors like pricing, competitive positioning, or variable cost management. But the more you think about it, the more understandable this link becomes. There are so many things one employee can do to affect profit. Everything from turning off more lights, to negotiating harder on price, to avoiding the temptations of the till. Simply put, these actions will happen more often when each employee feels truly engaged through his work's connection to the organization's mission or purpose, has an opportunity to do what he does best with colleagues he respects, and has ongoing opportunities to learn and grow. What about employee retention and customer perceptions of service quality? Employee turnover is costly to businesses and affects the service consistency that customers experience. Retention and customer service both improve when employees have clear expectations, have an opportunity to do what they do best, and feel like someone cares about them. Strong relationships among employees within business units means handoffs are seamless, and this translates into excellent customer service. Most people would instinctively agree with the generalization, engaged employees will stay longer. But our research suggests that the link between employee opinion and employee retention is subtler and more specific than this kind of generalization allows. The employee's immediate manager directly influences the items most consistently linked to turnover. This tells us that people leave managers, not companies. Businesses have thrown so much money at the challenge of keeping good people in the form of better pay, better perks, and better training, when, in the end, turnover is mostly a manager issue. If you have a turnover problem, look first to your managers. Of the 12, the most powerful items are those that have the most consistent links to multiple business outcomes and that are also the most immediately actionable. Armed with this perspective, we now know that the following 6 are the most powerful items. Q1, I know what is expected of me at work. Q2, I have the materials and equipment I need to do my work right. Q3, at work, I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day. Q4, in the last 7 days,